Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast here.
Been seeing you guys' podcast kind of blowing up here recently, so glad to get on.
It's Thursday, January 12th, 2023, and today we're gonna have a little fun. There's a lot of like coaching news, all that stuff. We could sit here and, you know, give you a full hour breakdown on D'Amico Ryan's defense, Ben Johnson's offense, Frank Reich. You know, where does he fit in this mix? We're not gonna do any of that. We're actually gonna have a good time today. We're gonna do some year-end fantasy awards, and who better to do that with than the guy who was in the co-pilot seat all year long with me every Sunday night? It's Scott Pienowski. Scott, I was saying it before we got started here, I feel like it's been a month since I've talked to you. It actually hasn't been that long, but I guess that's the effect of going from, you know, the 5-day a week podcast schedule to now we're down to 2-3 and everything that's been going on. So how you doing, buddy?
Yeah, it's been a while. Happy New Year. Good to be talking again. We got through week 18. Obviously, a lot's been going on in the NFL. I want to make one thing clear about this award show. This is the preeminent award show. These are more important than the Golden Globes. These are more important than the Academy Awards, the Emmys, the Tonys, you know, the baseball awards, you know, the Hall of Fame stuff, all that. Yep, whatever. That stuff is secondary. Today we are solving the, you know, the debates and the problems of the fantasy, you know, universe. This is all you are going to have a clear picture of what happened over the last 4 months from the hardware we give out tonight. And there are, you know, there are celebrities here, and there you're gonna be sound effects, and there's a red carpet. You know, I don't know why we're not in tuxedos, but
the red carpet was great. Yeah. We both looked great in our hoodies and hats walking down the Yahoo Fantasy Football
Forecast.
Yeah, this
is me dressed up, right? Yeah. Yeah. What's the joke? You know you're like Rainbow if you've worn sweatpants to a funeral. But anyway, yeah, let's get to the awards, man. Let's figure this stuff out. And by the way, I just, before anybody takes any of this too seriously, we will give out some serious awards. There'll be a lot of silly awards on this show. It's the goal is to have some fun. Fantasy football is supposed to be fun. It's a game about a game. I know, you know, certain moments of the season have more gravity than others. You know, prayers up to DeMar Hamlin, who's on the improve and going back home, which is great news to see.
Hell yeah.
But, you know, this is what we do. We're in the toy department. We're supposed to have fun with this. And let's try to have fun for the next 45 to 60.
Yeah, we're going to sandwich Scott and I's own personal awards between the real awards and producer Lord Podcast John's award, because he looked at our awards and our categories and said, okay, you two knuckleheads, we have to actually do some real ones here at the end. So let's start off with two of the big ones, though, before we jump into our own personal awards here, Scott. Let's start fantasy MVP. Who is your most valuable player in 2022 fantasy football?
I really struggled with this because I feel like you can talk down anybody. Is it the player who scored the most points? Is it the player who gave you the most bang for his ADP buck? Is it the player who was most impactful during the fantasy playoff? You know, I would have picked Travis Kelce a month ago. He didn't score any touchdowns in December, so he took a little bit of a step back. Jacobs obviously had a huge season. Josh Jacobs, which Andy Behrens has mentioned about 50,000 times. He was on Jacobs. I was not on Jacobs. He would have been a fine pick. He's the very top of the Yahoo MVP guy leaderboard. If you talk about the players who won the most Yahoo top 500 teams, I ultimately went with Jalen Hurts because it was a really ugly year for quarterback. And I just did my quarterback exit interview earlier this week. There were only 8 green lights that I found of the top 30 quarterbacks drafted. And Hurts went late enough. He was after Allen. He was after Mahomes. He did it passing. He did it running. He did it very consistently. Yes, you did have to replace him at the very end of the season. But, you know, for one of those games, Minshew actually scored really well too. So I went with Hurts. It could have been Kelce. It could have been Jacobs. It could have been Patrick Mahomes. Several wide receivers. I think if Justin Jefferson had done anything in the final game of the fantasy playoffs, I might have gone with him. These are all viable picks, and I know you didn't go with Hurts, but a very, I say weak, not that Hurts did anything wrong. I just don't think there's an obvious answer. I'm going with Jalen Hurts.
No, I think Hurts is a great one to offer up here because I think we're sort of in almost like the post late round quarterback world, right? Where there's not usually, and I guess Justin Fields actually ended up being this guy that, if you took him really late and you just did it because he was a rushing threat, you would have gotten like starting quarterback numbers all year long. But the thing about Justin Fields is he didn't start doing all that rushing stuff until what, like week 6, week 7. So he wouldn't even really count in that award in that like sense, right? So Hurts actually did, like you said, he went much later than all of these other guys, was the QB3 on the year. Obviously finished slow, but I mean, if you had Jalen Hurts, and I know this because I had Jalen Hurts on several teams and, you know, I didn't win the championship, but he put me in position to get there. And you could solve quarterback with a guy like Minshew, a guy like Brock Purdy, stuff like that. I'm an idiot. And I went Aaron Rodgers in a couple of those spots. And that's a big reason why I didn't end up there.
If you had Jalen Hurts, I feel like there's an excellent chance you made your playoffs. And also, there might have been a good chance you may have paired him with one of his teammates, you know, and when we talk about Philadelphia, team of the year, we'll talk more about them later, but you may have gotten AJ Brown. You may have gotten Miles Sanders, who oddly, the quarterback running back who could score and kind of in concert together. It was an ugly tight end year, but Goddard was good. And then Devonta Smith had a really good season, a little bit backloaded to the second half of the year. So I feel like if you had Hurts on your team, you probably made the playoffs. If you were lucky enough to link up with one of his teammates, man, you were probably one of the kingpins of your league.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you wrote Tony Pollard on the outline, too, because I didn't actually realize this until I went back and looked that he was the running back 7 this season. He was dynamic and was, you know, much like Josh Jacobs, went in, I guess, what you'd call the running back dead zone or the even just like a little bit after the running back dead zone. Jacobs ended up falling that far after the Hall of Fame game debacle. So I think those are two good names to bring up. I ended up going with Travis Kelce after deliberating a little bit here. I think obviously we got to mention Austin Eckler was the running back 1 overall. We talked about it with him on the podcast that came out yesterday, that he was on the most championship rosters. 22% of championship winning rosters on Yahoo had Austin Eckler. That was the highest among all players. Only him and Patrick Mahomes were over 20%. I think Mahomes obviously deserves to be mentioned here because he was the highest scoring player, period. But I ended up going with Travis Kelce, just honestly, Scott, because number one, the value of him over the tight end two. Travis Kelce scores 261 points in half PPR this year. Freaking tight end two is TJ Hockenson with 172.4 points, which is just an absolute huge gap. Also, Kelce was maybe like a fringe first round pick. Maybe, what would you say? He was probably like at the most like a back half first round pick. And I think the biggest thing with Kelce, and he will be a really interesting player to discuss next year. I know we all just filed our top 12 picks overall for next year. So make sure to go check that out on the website. He'll be interesting to discuss next year. But honestly, the reason I ended up giving him my MVP award was because, it would be great to just not think about tight end all year long, right? Like the fact that everybody else is out there like, oh God, do I pick up Evan Ingram, Cole Kmet, tight end 7 on the year. Give me a break. Tyler Higbee, tight end 9 on the year. Messing around with any of those guys, you don't have to do that. Do you have to do the Taysom Hill thing? No, you just have to plug Travis Kelce in there every single week. And I feel like that is value enough in itself.
Yeah, and I think you were playing it nice with some of those fill-in tight ends. I mean, was it a Hunter Henry week? Was it a Juwan Johnson week?
I was just going to say Juwan Johnson.
Dare I, you know, people thought at the beginning of the season, Albert O could do something. And then, for a while, Dulcich was a short-term answer. You know, at least Engram really got it going in the second half of the year. But you're right. You know, one of the great things about Kelsey, or, you know, and it goes with Hurts too. When you solve that onesie position, not only you're not chasing your tail in waivers to try to fix it, but it may buy you an extra roster spot. A lot of these Kittle managers probably never were chasing the hot tight end or never trying to play the Taysom Hill game or again, fill in any name you want that goes there. I still think Taysom Hill could have had a better season if the Saints maybe used him a little bit more proactively, but it buys you a little bit extra fab. It buys you some peace of mind. And in some cases, it may buy you an extra roster spot. As you said, Kelsey, what, into an age 34 season next year? So he's a tough call. I think I had him in the middle of my first round, but this is so early. We'll see what happens. I don't think I'm going to be drafting Kelsey next year, but man, he terrifies me every time I'm up against him.
Yeah, no question. And just the fact that guys like Mark Andrews and Dallas Goedert, these ones who probably could have challenged Travis Kelsey for that top spot, ended up getting hurt for most of this, for big chunks of the season, or, you know, didn't play up to performance for a guy like Mark Andrews. It ended up really just pushing things towards Kelsey there. All right. Let's move on to our next serious award here, Fantasy Rookie of the Year. And Scott, there are a lot of guys you could potentially consider here. Which way do you end up going?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a really deep rookie year, but I don't think anybody absolutely destroyed the game, smashed the game the way we have seen in some other seasons. But I ultimately went with Kenneth Walker, who took over the job early in the season with the injury to Penny. And I know he was maybe more valuable in fantasy than he was to the Seahawks. He's more of a boom or bust runner, didn't have the high success rate, doesn't always have that much proactive use in the passing game. But bottom line is, if you had Walker, once he got that job, you played him every week, and he generally gave you a reasonable score at the end of the week. A late push from Tyler Algier, who looks really good, and a lot of the secondary metrics really like Algier. If Atlanta can get a quarterback we like, I don't think Ritter's really a long-term solution. We'll see if they draft somebody or what they do, if they try to trade for somebody or sign somebody. But a lot of offensive pieces there I like. And, of course, there's so many good receivers. Wilson was great. Olave was great. I'll talk about some of the other guys who popped maybe in the second half of the year. I think this is a class that's going to age well. I think we're going to look back and say, oh, man, we got a lot of influx of talent in the 2022 season. A lot of these guys were impactful the first year, but the best is yet to come. The arrow is pointed up for so many of these guys. I don't see one player who dominated. I think even, you know, the real life offensive rookie of the year is going to be an interesting vote.
Yeah.
I went with Walker, but I could have easily gone with three or four different guys.
Yeah, Walker, like you mentioned, was a little bit boom or bust. Wasn't that rookie that just took over fantasy football. We'll talk about one of those rookies that could have been that guy at the very end of the show here.
Somebody who would have won it if he didn't get
somebody,
hurt.
Somebody who would have ran away from, actually somebody who said it on Twitter that he would have run away with it, but we'll get to that guy later on in the show. But Walker did finish really strong from week 16 to 18. He ran over 100 yards in all three of those games. He wasn't the running back that took over like the league like we usually see. I'm also glad you mentioned Al year. He should be a really fun player to debate in the offseason. Well, you know me, Scott. I gotta advocate for big receiver here. And I did really, really struggle between picking Chris Olave or Garrett Wilson, who at the end of the end of season rankings, these guys ended up being right back to back with each other. Chris Olave, wide receiver 23, Garrett Wilson, wide receiver 24. And Garrett Wilson, I think, gave you more monster weeks than Chris Olave. He also finished with a lot more targets. I think this is funny, right, when people compare the raw stats between these two guys. Because just like, again, I think these two players, it might end up going to Kenneth Walker just because he's a running back. Receivers typically really struggle to win the Rookie of the Year award in real life. But when we talk about these two guys and you look at their stats, like, yeah, they're very, very similar. Chris Olave, 72 catches. Garrett Wilson, 74 catches. 1,042 for Olave, 1,014 for Garrett Wilson. Four touchdowns for both of these guys. The Jets threw the ball way, way more than the Saints. And also, I get it that the first thing you say is, well, look at the quarterbacks that old Garrett Wilson played with all year. Well, I mean, are we all on board with PFF's love for Andy Dalton in the year 2022, or is that a bit of an outlier? I don't know. So I ended up giving it to Chris Olave. Very tough decision there. But yeah, Chris Olave, my fantasy rookie of the year this year.
Yeah, and you mentioned the quarterback play. That's a common theme of the rookie receivers, right? I mean, obviously Wilson was saddled with some bad play. You can decide how you feel about Dalton. Pickens and Pickett were the story in Pittsburgh. They only threw, I think, 12 touchdown passes, was it? Jahan Dotson had a lot of good moments in Washington. They did not have good quarterback play. So these are receivers. You know, a lot of these guys ended up with like 4 touchdown passes, catches on the year. Yeah. I think it's where Pickens wound up. So there again, this is going to be a group that ages well. These are guys who are going to have 10, 12, 14 touchdown seasons. Some of these guys in the years to come. It's just a matter of, and although I didn't give out an award for this, I did write about it in my quarterback exit interview. I thought the story of the year, and I've mentioned it many times on podcasts with you, the inconsistent quarterback play with injuries, with players struggling in new situations. Look at how many teams had to play their backup and their third string quarterback a lot more than they ever expected to because of injuries or poor performance. And it held a lot of guys down. I think in different years, some of these rookies we talk about, because they're super talented. Man, is Ohio State just a factory? You know, Marvin Harrison is coming, and they got a pipeline of guys, and we're going to be arguing over who the best one is. You know, in a different year, these guys easily could have been like 1,300, you know, 8, 9 touchdown guys. I think they're just held back sometimes by their quarterback play, but I can't wait to see where they're headed. As the college and pro games merge closer and closer, remember Jameson Williams missed most of the season due to an injury, and he was the guy picked, you know, by a lot of people as the best receiver in this class. So it's an exciting time to be part of Reception Perception, talking about you, talking with you about all this stuff. And, you know, I can't wait to see where this class goes, because I think they've only this plane is just taking off. I mean, they're going to get to 50,000 feet, and we're going to see some pinball scoring in the next few years.
Oh, man, it is such a fun class. I hope these guys find their way to quarterback solutions in the offseason. It is funny, I didn't even realize this, Scott, that, yeah, Drake London, 4 touchdowns. Chris Olave, 4 touchdowns. George Pickens, 4 touchdowns. Garrett Wilson, 4 touchdowns. The two guys who finished with 7 are Jahan Dotson and Christian Watson. Obviously, both guys playing with future Hall of Fame quarterbacks in Aaron Rodgers and Taylor Heineke. So, understandable why they were able to stuff the touchdowns there.
Well played. ODU's finest.
Exactly. ODU's finest, Taylor Heineke. Obviously, I think Jahan Dotson might have scored at least like 3 or 4 of those touchdowns with Carson Wentz.
Did they really bench Taylor Heineke for Carson Wentz, or did I just have too much Chinese food one night and have a bad dream? That really did happen, right?
Unfortunately, that really did happen. Then they got eliminated from the playoffs, and then they played Dalton Del Don's favorite quarterback, Sam Howell, to end the season, and they upset the Dallas Cowboys. So
has anybody done the count? This must be the year where the most quarterbacks played. I've never seen so many teams down to the third string guy.
Yeah, especially right towards the end of the season. I mean, just an absurd amount. And like, yeah, I just we're probably gonna get Tyler Huntley still starting in the. We're gonna talk about it tomorrow. We might get Anthony Brown. I mean, Lamar Jackson not practicing today. Tyler Huntley didn't throw because he's got. I mean. Unbelievable. But we'll save that for tomorrow's podcast.
I'm old enough to be of an age where you only needed to know some of the backup quarterbacks. And then it got to the point like, okay, you should probably know all the backup quarterbacks. Now I feel like you need to know every quarterback on the roster because they all might play.
Not even that. Like, you need to know who has old ties to the franchise. Like Josh Dobbs, right? Like, I think he had a couple cups of coffee in Tennessee, but he was on the Lions practice squad when they poached him and then started him immediately. So I mean, that's how crazy things are with the quarterback position right now. I mean, the Cardinals had 4 dudes. They had 4 guys: Murray, Colt McCoy, Trace McSorley, and then David Blough. I mean, that was
to put a point on this too. This is what blows my mind. And again, it's because it was such a problem league wide. Normally, when you have a team that goes through 3 or 4 quarterbacks, you're like, okay, they must have had a horrible season. Would they win 3 or 4 games? These were in a lot of cases, these were contending teams that were down to backup and third string quarterbacks. The 49ers may have 49ers. A good chance as anybody to win the NFC. They're on their third string quarterback. Washington was in the playoff hunt. They had no idea who their quarterback is. It's been so long since we've seen Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. And you know, Tua's not going to probably play for the rest of the season with good reason. It's just, it really made this season. I always laugh when people say, oh, this is the strangest season. This is the weirdest season. Yeah. Because every NFL season is weird in its own unique way. But to me, what made this season weird was just how unusual the quarterback. That's the story of the year, is that the quarterback play
Stafford got hurt and Rodgers took a step back and Russell Wilson lost his way. We'll talk about him in a minute. That made fantasy really challenging this year. And again, I guess that's backing up why I took Hurts' MVP, because I really felt good about having a quarterback answer in a year where there weren't. Normally, I feel like at any price point, you can do well at quarterback. I don't feel like that was true in 2022 at all.
Yeah, all of the guys are, it's like, okay, I missed out on the big three or four. It's like, well, I'll just take Brady. I'll just take Rodgers. I'll just take Derek Carr. None of that materialized.
The bench Derek Carr, yeah.
Yeah, the bench Derek Carr. Yeah, another team that started multiple quarterbacks. All right, we've been serious enough. I don't know how serious we've been, but we've got through the serious awards. So what we're going to do now is we're going to ping pong here. Scott will give one of his awards. I'll give one of my fake awards, and we'll just do it until we finish out here. Scott. You get us started. Your first of the Scott Pianowski awards here for the 2022 fantasy season.
The Pianow goes to the Touchdown Allergy Award. This is history, man. Sometimes you're just going to give it up. We are all witnesses to Deontay Johnson, 147 targets, no touchdowns. And that is an NFL record. The targets are official stat back to 1992. So fairly new thing, although I can't imagine anybody had 147-plus targets prior to 1992 without a touchdown.
Nah, yeah.
The previous record, again, going back to 92, was the immortal Michael Timpson, part of the 1996 Bears. He had 109 targets, no touchdowns. Monty Toomer had 107 one season. Torrey Holt, does anybody remember him as a Jaguar? 103 targets, no touchdowns. So basically, these were the worst seasons of, okay, stuck over 100 targets, didn't score a touchdown. And Johnson blew that out of the water. And then the only kind of tension at the end of the year was he going to sneak in a touchdown? Now, here's kind of the cute cherry on the top of the sundae. Deontay Johnson caught a two-point conversion in the final game of the year. That it was his second two-pointer, okay? So your two-point leaderboard this year was Hurts, Hockenson, Deontay, and Zach Ertz all had two two-pointers, okay? Which is, as we all know, it's a play run at the goal line, basically. It's what, 2.5-yard line, whatever it is. So it's not like the Steelers throwing a pass that ends up with Deontay Johnson in the end zone is totally foreign to them because they did it twice. And again, they only threw 12 touchdown passes. I get it. I think Pickett actually looked a little bit better every week. I think he has a chance. I'm not going to die on the hill that Kenny Pickett's going to be great, but I at least was seeing improvement, which is fortunate. We know Johnson is the type of player who's never probably going to be a big touchdown guy because of the routes he runs and where he plays on the field. And what do we see this year, right? Miles Sanders, right? We know touchdowns the previous year, and then this year he scores a bunch of them. We know how regression works positively and negatively. I would think anybody's reasonable projection next year for Johnson is probably, what, 6-7 touchdowns, something like that. Maybe 4 or 5 in a bad year, maybe 8 or 9 in a good year. So there's a lot of flukiness here. But man, somehow a guy had 147 targets that didn't score a touchdown. So congratulations. Take your award. The Touchdown Allergy Award will look nice on your mantle.
Oh, it'll look so beautiful. And, you mentioned the week 18 two-point conversion. There were clearly several times, when they were trying to get Deontay that one touchdown, like he got wide open on a slant route at one point and Kenny Pickett threw it to him and it got batted down at the line. And both Johnson and Pickett are like rolling their eyes at like how this is not happening. So it was destiny, man. It was absolute destiny. You're right. The 2-point conversion stuff is a cherry on top. Kenny Pickett had a 1.8% touchdown rate. It's the lowest of any rookie in the Super Bowl era with at least 310 attempts. I saw John Paulson, a 4-for-4, tweet that out yesterday. And I think this dovetails perfectly into the first award I want to give out. I'm calling this the Extra Glass in the Film Room Award. And what I mean by that is like, hey, listen. Sometimes when you're grinding that tape, you're charting receivers, you're doing whatever you need to do. Maybe sometimes it's in the morning. You better bring an extra cup of coffee. Sometimes it's at night. Maybe you're pouring yourself a little extra, maybe 3 fingers of whiskey when you're coming in there, a little bourbon action. It's when you're doing the Matt Canada offense. Okay. I mean, enough already with the Matt Canada offense. It is certainly, as I've said all year, it's the worst designed offense in the NFL. As of right now, we're taping this Wednesday. There's been no news about, any coaching changes happening in Pittsburgh. Please, let's not have these guys, Johnson and Pickett. I know there's always a concern about changing offenses on your young quarterback. Like, we don't want this guy learning another system. This will be his third in 3 years coming from college. But I think we got to make a change here with Matt Canada as the offensive coordinator. It just, they're drawn dead when they walk in there against cover two with some of the routes that they run. And like everybody plays zone coverage. It's a nightmare. It's my worst offense in the NFL. Bring the extra glass, whether it's caffeine in the morning, a little bourbon at night. You better bring that extra glass if you're going to be watching that Matt Cannon offense in the film room.
Yeah, well said. Blame Canada. And as I was talking about all the bad quarterback play, you can't have 32 teams change their quarterbacks. What you're going to have is a lot of teams change their offensive coordinators. Or maybe in New England, they'll actually pick an offensive coordinator.
That would be nice.
Out loud. That would be nice.
How excited are you for Cliff? He's in consideration for this job.
You know, I did not like Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona at all, but I call it the reverse Peter principle. The Peter principle says that you will be promoted to a job that basically you're not qualified for at some point. And the opposite of that, what I call the reverse Peter principle, is like taking a failed head coach and putting him back to his coordinator roots. I think of people like Wade Phillips. I think of people like Norv Turner. Think of the reputation rehab program that Nick Saban runs in Alabama, where it's like, okay, let's get Sark down here. Sarkisian, you know, has a nice run. He move along your way. I think Lane Kiffin was there for a year or two, something like that.
Bill O'Brien there right now.
I was joking that maybe Kingsbury could be, you know, up for the Nick Saban fellowship, but you know, like Josh McDaniels, right? Maybe he's over his head as a head coach. I still think he was a good offensive coordinator. So I would be interested to see what maybe Kingsbury could do, you know, as back to his coordinator roots. And, you know, a lot of people will say that the better head coaches are the CEO coaches. They're not necessarily the game design coaches. I know there are exceptions. Andy Reid's a genius and all that with play design, and you never want to take that away from him. But I will not dismiss the idea that Kingsbury could be a valuable coordinator. And again, there's going to be a lot of coordinator changes because these teams, you can't make 32 quarterback changes, but you're going to see a lot of coordinator movement. Of course, anybody who shows chops as coordinator, we know Johnson, Detroit's guy, is going to be aggressively interviewed. They may lose him in Detroit. Then we have to play the game of, okay, well, do we like the Detroit offense as much with a new coordinator? We had to play that game with Buffalo. Well, what do they do without Brian Daboll? Turns out the offense was just fine, although Brian Daboll did a great job with the Giants. You know, I didn't come up with the Daniel Jones Award, but I just want to duck in. I think he was the most improved player in the NFL this year. He led the NFL in interception rate, the lowest interception rate. He's cleaned up that fumbling problem. Crazy. And he did it with almost nothing at wide receiver. So I want to give a shout out to Jones. I felt like he should have been here somewhere, but I didn't squeeze him in. But I did squeeze in Russell Wilson, my next award, the Island of Hell Award. What the hell is that? It's the Broncos, the hot team in the summer, were on island games 5 of the first 8 weeks, I want to say. And then even after Halloween, they kept showing up. And then just the cherry on the sundae, they play on Christmas Day against the Rams team that's basically drawing dead. And the Rams beat them 123-6, score approximation, to Baker Mayfield, no less. And Cam Akers ran wild like he was, you know, Adrian Peterson in his prime. What did we do to sign up? How do I unsubscribe from the Denver Broncos? Now, at least they actually played a little bit better after they fired Nathaniel Hackett. Yeah. You know, maybe Hackett's another guy who, you know, we'll see if he gets a coordinator job. He sure seemed over his skis as a head coach. But, and you know, I also tied in, you know, the Island of Hell Award goes to the Broncos. You know, Russell Wilson gets the Moving Is Hell Award, changes teams, everything falls apart. But the Moving Is an Adventure Award I give to Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, and A.J. Brown. They all changed teams. They were all great. Tyreek did it with multiple quarterbacks. A.J. Brown did it with a quarterback that people were not sure how great he was as a passer. Looked just fine this year. Devontae Adams did it, led the NFL in touchdowns, despite a season Derek Carr played poorly enough to get benched. And then Adams was still doing it, you know, when the backup had to play. So wide receivers changing teams, no problem. Russell Wilson changing teams, big problem. And for some reason, we all had front row seats to the 2022 Denver Broncos. And thank God that's over.
I loved your moving awards because everybody here listening to this podcast has moved before. And
it's the worst.
It is the worst. Objectively, it's terrible. I've moved across the country before. Might do it again in a few years. And it's frustrating beyond belief. However, if you can get through the pains of moving, you know, the who's going to do this? Who's going to do that? Are we hiring movers? Is a buddy going to come and I got to pay a buddy and, you know, a case of beer and some pizza or whatever? What do I got to do? Getting through all the logistics of it. buying the house, finding an apartment to rent, all that stuff. If you can get through it, if you can get through all the offseason of like, well, what's AJ Brown going to do in Philadelphia? Or, you know, can Tyreek Hill really succeed without Mahomes? I mean, if you can get through all that nonsense, the reward can be pretty great if you find the right spot, if you find a good place to live, you find a new great community. All of these guys, all of these receivers, these star-studded receivers absolutely did find that. So I love that analogy there, Scott. Sometimes it's worth going through the pain to get to the end destination. Since you brought up AJ Brown, I'll give my next award here, and it's the best fantasy ecosystem. Yes, drink. I said the word ecosystem. The Philadelphia Eagles, I think, were the best ecosystem in fantasy. I debated the 49ers a little bit, but because they were so kind of hard to pin down at different points, and because like Debo was a second round pick that wasn't that great, you know, they didn't get McCaffrey until the back half of the year, I decided not to go with the 49ers. I did go with the Philadelphia Eagles, and it's because of the thing we talk about all the time here, Scott. Not only are they a great offense, but we knew where the ball was going, baby. Even when Dallas Goedert got out of there, it's like, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to throw to Devontae Smith. We're going to throw to AJ Brown. We're going to do it even more than we used to do. Miles Sanders is a huge value pick. All of these guys honestly came at a huge discount as well. We talked about Hurts. Brown was, you know, not a top 10 consensus ranked receiver going into this year. Devontae Smith, I mean, I'm still praying for forgiveness at wide receiver church for burying Devontae Smith, who I knew that was so talented, but had questions about the offense. And I think we got to give a shout out to Nick Sirianni, Shane Steichen, another guy who's getting interviews for coaching, you know, because I talk about this with Devontae Smith in the offseason, like what they did last year is not really within like the coach's wheelhouse, right? Like these guys don't come from Baltimore or working with a mobile quarterback or something like that. They come from like working with Phillip Rivers and in both Indianapolis and in LA, in the case of Shane Steichen. You know, Shane Steichen's last year as an offensive coordinator was with Justin Herbert. Like, so they made that Hurts offense last year on the fly, and then they remade the offense again this year around a different improved version of Jalen Hurts. So just shout out to the coaches, shout out to the player, and shout out to the concentrated tree of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, concentrated is the right word. What a perfect team, right? We know where the ball's going. Great offensive line. Even the defense, they had four different players with double-digit sacks. So what a fun team that was. And I can't wait to see them. You know, I think it's going to be a very top-heavy playoffs. I think there's like five or six teams that have separated themselves from everybody else. Philadelphia's one of those teams. Can't wait to see what they do. They were the team to invest in. I agree. I you know, you want to call it, I might use the word infrastructure. You use the word ecosystem. They're basically synonymous. That's a great award from you.
Yeah, they're the fourth best fantasy defense too. It's a good of you to mention that. And like, I don't think about fantasy defenses nearly enough. But they were really good as a fantasy defense overall.
Comes from leverage, right? You want to be ahead. You want to be ahead in games. You want your pass rushers pinning their ears back. You want the other team to be one dimensional in the fourth quarter. Maybe even throw a couple of yellow balls. What do they care? The pitchy woo woo at the end of the game, as Scott Van Pelt would say. So. Yeah, good stuff. I'll go back to your favorite position, the wide receiver position, the Polaroid Award, the slow-developing rookie receiver who popped for us late. I'm going to give it to two guys. You mentioned them earlier. Jahan Dotson and Christian Watson both had seven touchdowns in a year where a lot of talented receivers couldn't get in the end zone for different reasons. No fault of their own. But Dotson was somebody you may have picked up in the middle of the season, was really useful. And once Watson got in the Aaron Rodgers circle of trust, not easy to do, but Watson did it, and he was a guy who had a nice touchdown binge. And I get it, touchdowns can be a little bit fluky, but we see the playmaking skills of these guys. And the fact that Dotson was doing it with such ordinary quarterback play really stuck out to me. And on a team that has other good playmakers as well, you know, because McLaurin and Samuel and guys like that can certainly go. And it was just nice to see the Packers find something at receiver, because you know, Lazard's just a guy, and obviously they moved on from Adams, and you know, whatever Bob Tonyan did a couple of years ago, that's out the window. They never really got their running game, I think, where they wanted it to be. I don't think Jones and Dylan lost you your league, but they probably did, certainly didn't win you anything. But Christian Watson was a guy probably given up for dead in a lot of fantasy leagues who popped in the second half of the year, and so did Dotson. This is one of my favorite things to do, is look for the, and you know, even I could have even given Drake London a mention here, because he played really well once the quarterback changed, right? I mean, not that Desmond Ritter's anything great, but Desmond Ritter did unlock Drake London, and that's something that didn't really happen in the first couple months of the year.
Yeah, Desmond Ritter understood the assignment, where Marcus Mariota did not. It's like, okay, yeah, there's a lot of interesting players in here. let me get this guy the ball, which is what I'll defend my guy Arthur Smith I don't know if he's my guy, but I'll defend Arthur Smith on that one. That sometimes it's got the quarterback's got to get out there and hit the plays. Ritter did hit the plays. Glad you mentioned Drake London. Yeah, incredible finish for Jahan Dotson. 5 for 54 and a touch against the Giants. They come off their bye. 4 for 105 and a touch against the Giants again. San Francisco 49ers, 76 yards and a touchdown. And then 3 for 37 thanks to Carson Wentz. Oh, my God, Carson Wentz. And then finishes with 3 for 72 against the Dallas Cowboys. So great mention of him. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll keep giving out our extremely serious awards here on the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax. The way car buying should be.
All right, we're back. And this dovetails perfectly into another one of my awards here, because I'm going to give out, and this one's special to my heart, or maybe hurts my heart, because each of the last 2 years, Scott, I have somehow found my way to being overweight or, you know, too excited about a second year wide receiver who ends up getting in the doghouse somehow. You know, it was Brandon Ayuk in 2021. It was Elijah Moore in 2022. Don't know what I'm doing there. Don't know how I end up. I'm trying to avoid that player next year. I'm going to give this award, the second year wide receiver most likely to end up in the doghouse next season, I'm going to give it to George Pickens. And a couple of reasons here. I mean, I don't know. I'm totally trying to guess this because I wouldn't have thought Ayuk was this guy. I wouldn't have thought Elijah Moore was this guy. But, you know, George Pickens, he's always out there like trying to get himself more targets. You know, he says he's open 99% of the time. Let me tell you what, George, you're not open 99% of the time, not even close. So I'm going to give this award to George Pickens as I'm predicting in 2023 at some point there is going to be some sort of public. Maybe he won't get in the doghouse because Mike Tomlin's like too good of a coach to really just doghouse a player like this. Not that Shanahan's not a good coach or Robert Saleh's not a good coach, but I think he's better at managing personalities. We know that with Mike Tomlin, but I'm going to give George Pickens the second-year wide receiver most likely to end up in the doghouse next year.
A lot of good things here. I like you using doghouse as a verb. Good stuff there.
Doghouse.
I like you giving out an award that's based on where you think the puck is headed, right? That's really, if I'll be serious for a minute, that's what fantasy's all about, right? We can chew up and analyze as much as we want what just happened, but what matters is what's going to happen next year. And I love that this award is actually projecting that. I think I like Pickens more than you do, because Pickens and Pickett is going to drive me crazy.
It's going to be tough.
7 or 8 years. But I think Kenny Pickett got better. Steelers are, because look, Mike Tomlin's a great coach. And it's funny, I was talking about what a great coach Mike Tomlin was, and he bails out another winning season. They almost made the playoffs. And it's amazing how many Steeler fans are just frustrated because they're just used to the Steelers going deep in the playoffs and winning championships. And they're like, well, where are the playoff wins? And I push back a little bit on that. I'm like, you know, you guys don't know what it's like to have a lousy head coach, which a little bit spoiled.
I think
this is spoiled nature too. That's the word I would use. You know, I mean, you've Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season, and he's had challenges. You know, Antonio Brown, talented, was a challenge. Ben Roethlisberger was a challenge. Yeah. Le'Veon Bell was a challenge. He had injuries. He's not an excuse maker. Is he perfect? No. But Bill Belichick doesn't draft that great. And Andy Reid has timeout flaws every once in a while. And Kyle Shanahan's overall one-loss record isn't as great as you might think it is. I mean, you can pick on anybody. We all have the problems that Mike Tomlin is our head coach. So I think they changed the coordinator. At least I hope they do. I'm done with Canada too. I was impressed with, I think, Pickett getting better at the end of the year. I think Pickens shows the possible talent of being a wide receiver one. So I think I like him a little bit more than you do. But again, you know, I like the way you frame this award, and I think it's useful for the discourse going forward.
I don't know how useful it is for the discourse going forward, because I wouldn't have predicted I wouldn't have predicted Ayuk or Elijah Moore to be those guys to end up in the doghouse. But then, you know, Elijah Moore complaining about his role while the team is winning, never a good look, all that stuff. So who knows? But I'm trying to project a little bit here with George Pickens. So we shall see. we shall see how we project him in the offseason. Scott, give me your next award here.
Yeah, I got two more. I actually had something for Kyle Pitts that I'm going to scrap. So if you wanted Kyle Pitts.
No. We'll keep your one by one. I'm not in any rush here. So go one by one here.
Well, the unlikeliest cop buddy show award goes to Brock Purdy and George Kittle. Okay. Now the story with George Kittle was always, he's awesome. He's intense and he's smart and he's physical and he blocks like a maniac. And he set the record 1 year for tight end yardage, but where are the touchdowns? And then Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, a guy projected to maybe have a career as a backup, gets in the pilot chair, and George Kittle scores 7 touchdowns in 4 games out of nowhere. And we've been waiting for Kittle to be unlocked. And again, we talk all the time. We talked about early in the show, touchdowns are fluky. There's a lot of noise. There can be a lot of reasons. And, when you're on a team with as many good skill players as the 49ers, you can't blame them when they're scheming Ayuk or they're scheming McCaffrey or they're scheming Samuel when he's healthy. They've had other good players. So many guys can score on this team that it's not like it's a flaw of Kittle when he ends the year with 5 or 6 touchdowns. But it's just so funny that the George Kittle touchdown explosion came with Brock Purdy. I have no idea how good Brock Purdy is, but right now I think the 49ers are going to the Super Bowl, man. And I guess that means I believe in Brock Purdy and I believe in the Cobb Buddy show that is Brock Purdy to George Kittle. I'm going to try to hook those guys up in some of my playoff drafts.
And what's a couple of beautiful things here. Number one, similar to with DJ Moore, who I wanted to try to find a way to give DJ Moore some kind of cutesy award because
he's made me sad. I had the eternal, sunshine of the spotless mind. I'd gotten DJ Moore out of my mind for like maybe 10 minutes, and you finally had to remind me
of
him.
I'm sorry.
I had so many DJ Moore shares, man. I could not wait. He was my automatic 3rd or 4th round pick in so many leagues, and it just went nowhere. But I had to play him. And look, he actually was okay.
That's what I'm saying. He had 7 touchdowns. And if I told you at the beginning of the year, DJ Moore's going to have, he scored 7. And that was the big, bugaboo with both him and George Kittle. That's why I brought it up because Kittle scores 11 touchdowns this year. Like that was always like, can we get him more than 5? Because his career high, I think going into this, his career high was 6 last year. But like, when were we going to get that eruption touchdown season from George Kittle? When were we going to get it from DJ Moore? Not the 7 is an eruption, but like, Sam Darnold was the guy to unlock DJ Moore. Brock Purdy, the guy to unlock George Kittle. That's pretty beautiful stuff.
Right. And again, you get those touchdowns in the fantasy playoffs. So I'm sure a lot of people were like, oh, hey, yeah, he's got Kittle. I got Kelsey. I got you at that spot. And George Kittle, I don't know what his win rate was, but I'm sure it was pretty high because his best play obviously came in December.
Yeah, it was beautiful stuff with George Kittle there. All right, I'll give an award out here. The Worst Offseason Narrative Award. It's got to go to Amon-Ra's 2021 finish. How many times, Scott, was it brought up by the Amon-Ra detractors in the offseason? Well, yeah, he finished last season, but he's not going to do that again because look at the guys that he was playing with. Look at the guys last year, in terms of who was out, right? Like, the players that missed, it was all just volume stuff. Targets, targets aren't earned, right? It wasn't because Amon-Ra was good. It was because, he was playing with a bunch of guys last year who don't really, he was the only one there. He was the only option, right? Well, that ended up certainly not being the case. He was one of the league leaders in targets per route run was Amon-Ra St. Brown. He was a volume sponge. 30.3% targets per route run. He was 25.9% target share was Amon-Ra St. Brown. Sometimes it pays to shut off bad narratives and just focus on how good the player is. Amon-Ra St. Brown. Watch the games. He was unbelievable last year. That volume was obviously going to carry over. So it ends up being the worst offseason narrative award was, his finish last year is unsustainable because the other players will be healthy. Well, that never materialized. Even when TJ Hawkinson was still on the team, DeAndre Swift was healthy early in the season. He was still dominating targets.
Yeah, I could have thrown TJ Hawkinson into the, moving is an adventure award because he was actually good when he went to Minnesota. Detroit was probably, I didn't have an award for the most fun team. They weren't as lucrative as Philadelphia, but they were just so much fun. They covered 12 times in a season, or after last year, I think they covered 11 times. They only won 3 games. And I think everybody thinks they're probably playoff worthy on merit. They needed to win 1 more game, or if Seattle hadn't gotten every call possible against the Rams in week 18, maybe the Lions make the playoffs, and yet they show up, they beat the Packers. You know, Jamal Williams lived in the end zone. We could have given him awards, you know, for the touchdown deodorant award or whatever you want to give him, because he was just a spike show. And, you know, St. Brown was legit. Goff winning year two of the breakup. Of course, the Rams did win the championship last year.
Yeah.
So we'd come up with a Rams award. I guess it's just too depressing to talk about it.
The depressing award.
It would force you to have an Allen Robinson reckoning that you're probably not ready for. But yeah, St. Brown's a stud. Goff, in a year where so many quarterbacks went wrong, Goff was one of the few green light right answers. Williams was great. You know, DeAndre Swift was kind of frustrating with his, you know, SAT question. How many touches this week? 7, 8, 9. And then out of nowhere, he'd get like 18. And then you go back to 7 the next week. But the Lions were fun. The challenge next year is, you know, to do it, to incorporate Jameson Williams for a full season. Right. They may have a new coordinator because obviously Johnson's going to be interviewed by everybody. But I'm going to miss the Detroit Lions. And St. Brown was certainly one of the right answers at receiver. You know, what we saw last year was certainly indicative of what was coming in 2022.
All right. Give me your next one. This you've got, I think, the scapegoat variety award.
The scapegoat award. I give it up to the Colts, man. They're all about blaming somebody, and they're all about blaming somebody different. One week it was Matt Ryan's fault. Oh, no, the next week it was actually Frank Reich's fault. Oh, I'm sorry, it was the offensive coordinator's fault. I'm sorry, it's the GM's fault. Oh, it's actually Ellinger's fault again. It's the defense's fault. It's Jeff Saturday's fault. They've run out of people to blame. You know, maybe it's Ursay's fault. Maybe it's it's the, you know, let's go to the top on this. I thought the Colts were going to run away with the AFC South. Spoiler, they did not run away with the AFC South. They're one of the worst teams in football.
Scott, we have got some takes that aged poorly on this podcast about the Colts, me and you. I'll tell you that.
Oh, man. I thought they would win. I thought they would win the division, you know, with 2 or 3 weeks to spare. And, you know, my Michael Pittman shares, RIP, Jonathan Taylor, never missed a practice. He missed the practices this year. I mean, whatever. Players get hurt. I'm not here to knock Jonathan Taylor because he got hurt in a game that's as physical as the NFL is. But, you know, Pittman was sunk by his quarterback play. You know, Paris Campbell would play just well enough for you to trust him the next week and for him to do nothing. We know what the Colts love to do, too. By the way, not only do they love scapegoating players, they love getting a big tight end performance and then making sure that player does nothing for the next 3 weeks. That's such an Indianapolis Colts move. I'm sick of these guys, man. I'd like to put them on probation. If they were like a European soccer team, I'd relegate them for a season. Nobody would miss the Indianapolis. Well, whatever. Let Michael Pittman and Jonathan Taylor go to new teams for a year. But otherwise, nobody would miss the Colts next season.
Did you see Chris Ballard's quote from his press conference yesterday? Let me find it. I'm going to be...
While you're looking for that, I want to be fair. 2 or 3 years ago, I would have told you I thought Ballard was a great GM.
Oh, yeah, I know. And it's pretty questionable. Pretty questionable things there. By the way, okay, so I found the quote. Exactly. So Colts GM Chris Ballard yesterday, we live in an NFL world where failure is not allowed. When you fail in this world, you get canceled and everybody wants your head, and rightfully so in some cases. But if you're able to go through it and learn from it, you can reach your greatest heights. Well, it sounds like, Scott, we're ready to actually cancel the Indianapolis Colts. So the Colts are canceled here. We are embracing cancel culture, which I didn't know applied.
It's a horse thing. It's a horse thing. I'm canceling the Broncos and I'm canceling the Colts, man. It's, you know, it was not a good year for horses.
We are anti-horse on this here podcast, that is for sure. All right, I will give my last award, and then Scott will wrap it up before we go through some more serious awards here. My last one is the Wasted Oxygen Award, and it's got to go to Gabe Davis. I mean, Scott, the amount of tweets, the amount of articles and podcasts that went into, like, the great Gabe Davis debate.
The flag planting in February, the flag planting in March. Oh, man.
It was again, just total wasted oxygen. I said this on my podcast, the Reception Perception Show with James Coe. I said this, that, like, being the centrist, we were doing like a off-season sort of take evaluation. I said all off-season that I was a Gabe Davis centrist, and I feel like that was the right place to be. He was wide receiver 35. Obviously, he did miss a game. He missed games, and then, of course, the Bills, you know, didn't play a full schedule because of the Bengals game being canceled, everything like that. But, you know, like, the most hilarious thing about Gabe Davis was that not only was he just like, okay, he was a pretty middle of the road wide receiver three. The people who were super anti Gabe Davis, like, oh no, he sucks, he's not even an NFL player, that was silly. They're like, oh, Gabe Davis is sky high upside. That was even crazier, Scott, because then we had to waste more oxygen during the season and being like, you know what? Yeah, I know. Gabe Davis just dropped like 3 for 35 or 2 catches for 35 yards in your starting spot, but you can't bench him because of the upside. He had one game over 100 yards. Like, the upside was even overstated. Just total wasted oxygen on all these Gabe Davis debates. Let's try to not do that with a player this offseason.
Yeah, well said. It's shocking to me that with Josh Allen having a strong year, he won't be the MVP, but he was obviously one of the right answers at quarterback. I'm surprised I haven't mentioned him until now. And Buffalo was in contention for the number one seed all season. We know their season had an unusual turn at the end of it. And again, prayers to DeMar Hamlin. Somehow Buffalo only had two every week, no doubt, set and forget fantasy players. It was Diggs and it was Allen. Insane. Singletary, you know, you didn't want to play him, but you could. Knox, you didn't really, I know you struggled with him all year. You didn't really want to play him, but you could. Gabe Davis, where you drafted him, you felt like you had to play him, but drove you crazy. You knew Isaiah McKenzie about every 5 weeks or so would have a big game. James Cook would pop every once in a while. Nyheim Hines put on a kick return show in week 18 and wasn't that inspiring when he took the opening kick back. But, awesome. You know, he basically, yeah. For the most part, he wasn't a factor. You know, getting off the sinking ship that was the Colts. I didn't think Buffalo had it in them that Allen could have a great year. And obviously when Allen runs in a touchdown, nobody else gets the benefit of that. But I had them ranked as the number one fantasy offense before the season. I don't know where I would have ranked them now if I did an end of season ranking. I did revisit those quarterly, but they certainly wouldn't be number one now. It's just funny that I still think they might go to the Super Bowl. We'll see how healthy their secondary is. Obviously Cincinnati and Kansas City are going to have a big say in that. Maybe the Chargers will find their footing. It's a very deep AFC, but they could go to the Super Bowl in a year where they only had two reliable fantasy players on a team that's basically built around its offense. That's something I didn't see coming.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, there's a lot of unforeseen stuff there, of course, with Buffalo. But yeah, that offense was great. It was good for most parts of the year. There were different parts where it was a little rocky, but just the lack of non-Diggs threats. Was a big problem for Buffalo all year. All right, Scott, give me your last one, and then we'll go kind of rapid fire here to wrap it up on Lord Podcasts Award.
Yeah, this will be a quick one. Just the Waiting for Godot Award, or Waiting for Guffman, if you want. It was Kyle Pitts every week. This is going to be the Kyle Pitts week, right? He's too good to have another 2 for 17. Yeah. He's too good to have another 3 for 21. He's eventually going to score on American soil, which he did this year. I get it. Mariota over his head. Desmond Ridder. You know, who's to say what he's going to be, but early returns don't look good. There are different angles of attack on Arthur Smith. All I ask for is, can you just prioritize your best players? All right. I get it. You only wanted to throw 20 passes a game and all that, but could we at least get most of the targets to Drake London? Cause he's really good. And Kyle Pitts, cause he's really good. Now the Pitts came into the league at a young age. He's still what? Just 23. We'll see if they have a new quarterback next year. So people will be talking about him as maybe a difference maker or a breakout player, whatever it is. But I feel like we've been waiting, you know, again, like Godot, like Guffman, we've been waiting for, this is the week for Kyle Pitts. And, Kyle Pitts is always, to steal the line from Brett Light's Big City, Kyle Pitts was always on his way in 2022, but he very seldom arrived.
What references are those that I totally don't understand here for this Kyle Pitts award?
That's what I'm like, all about. The obscure references.
But I'm saying, like, what are they? I don't know. What are they?
You never heard of Waiting for Godot? That's a famous book. You never heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, Waiting for Guffman is one of the Christopher Guest movies. They did This is Spinal Tap, Best in Show.
I've seen Spinal Tap.
Okay. Yeah, so Waiting for Guffman is they're waiting for this critic named Guffman to show up to review their community theater event or whatever it is, Guffman never shows up.
Waiting for Godot, man.
I don't know how you'd never heard of Waiting for Godot. It's a famous, it's one of those books that you had to read in college. Maybe they phased it out in the last 15 or 20 years. I don't know. Maybe it's been canceled like Chris Ballard for all I know. But
I was going to say, I mean, it's only a 3, apparently, according to Goodreads, it's only a 3.8 out of 5, Scott. So, I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know. All right. Well, that's our book talk for the episode.
I'm going to ask you this. What's your favorite book of all time?
See, I'm a bit of a weird reader in that I mostly read I don't read a lot of fiction. Now my favorite, like if I'm being honest, my favorite book series is, I'm a huge I'm a huge Potterhead. I know that makes me like not a cultured man, but I'm a huge Harry Potter dork. I could go Potter all day long. But like my favorite books to read were this is the type of reader I am, was like Irving Goffman's books on like sociological books, stuff like that. That was my favorite. Those are my favorites to read. Presentation of Self in Everyday Life. I wrote my whole college thesis on that. That's like my favorite stuff to read, is that type of stuff. So I need to be a better fiction reader, Scott. As an adult, I read a lot of fiction growing up, but as like an adult, I read a lot of very dry, like history, old presidential books, that type of stuff. So I'm a very weird reader, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, it didn't have to be a fiction answer. It's funny you say that, because I grew up English major, writing major. You've read a lot of fiction, and now I am much more biography driven, much more nonfiction driven. You know, I've read like every, even though I would never like let a son of mine get anywhere near Bob Knight, I've read like everything there is about Bob Knight. I think he's fascinating.
Yeah.
I've read A Season on the Brink several times. There's an unauthorized biography of Bob Knight that's outstanding. I watch a lot of documentaries. That's probably my favorite genre of TV. But as far as books go, some of your classics, Great Gatsby is a great one. The Catcher in the Rye is a great one. Ball 4, which is a baseball book, a nonfiction book, which is very funny, insightful, about a pitcher on an expansion baseball team who's trying to hang on throwing a knuckleball because his arm is shot. The late Jim Boughton. It's just a great book on human nature and the culture of a clubhouse is one of my favorite reads. And I'll mention Bright Lights, Big City for the second time. A very quick read. The type of, if you're on like a coast to coast flight, you could probably read Bright Lights, Big City in 4 hours. It's like 190 pages or something like that. But Jay McInerney's semi-autobiographical story of a young writer who's in New York trying to struggle with some of the challenges of being in New York in the 1980s. And it actually was a really good movie too, with Michael J. Fox and Kiefer Sutherland, a couple of Canadian boys. So. Wow. Shout out to that. There you go. This, you know, we said we're going to be silly, but we're giving you reading recommendations. This is the extra value you get from the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
Sapiens, that's another nonfiction book that I read recently that I really love. And my father-in-law has that. I need to get it back from him. I would love to, how much money would you like to bet that he has not even read that book since I lent it to him?
Also, Murakami. You can't go wrong with a Murakami book if you want a fiction read. He's one of the finest writers out there.
It was Waiting for Godot. This is a play. That's why I haven't read a lot of plays.
Oh, right. Okay, of course. Yeah. That's how far removed I am from it. I don't even remember the shape of it, but.
There you go. Well, yeah, I feel like there's a, we'll get back to the awards here in like 5 seconds, but I feel like there's been a lessening of like plays that you read when you're in school like these days, but you know what? That's a whole nother topic. Okay. Let's finish it up here. We just went so far off course. All right, let's finish it with Lord Podcasts Awards here, and we'll go pretty quickly on these. But they're your more typical fantasy ones. Starting here with the most disappointing season-ending injury of the fantasy season. We mentioned it at the top of the show. Breece Hall. It's got to be Breece Hall. He even tweeted this week. I think he quoted an Underdog tweet like, "You guys are lucky I didn't finish the season," or whatever, because he definitely would have run away with Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. I think actually Hall, and I would also mention Cooper Kupp, who was once again destroying the wide receiver board. And granted,
he's still wide receiver 22. He still has more points on the year than Chris Olave.
Yeah, he gets the Derrick Henry Award for the guy who missed half the season.
That's right.
He still has a decent score at the end of the year, which is what Henry did last year, right? He missed like half the year. It's like, oh yeah, Derrick Henry was running back 12, and he wasn't even here for 2 months. But yeah, Breece Hall was going to be a difference maker and was going to be the Rookie of the Year. And who knows, maybe the Jets would even be a playoff team if Hall had stayed healthy. Lord Podcast also mentioned the best waiver wire pickup of the season. And this was not a great waiver wire season. I was thinking of giving Jerick McKinnon an award for the December to remember, because this is a guy who had 9 touchdown catches and 8 of them came from December onward. Okay, he did not have a top 20 fantasy game until December. And then he finished running back 16, running back 1, running back 1, running back 21, running back 6, running back 28. So you could have played him. Once you got the idea that he was in the circle of trust, and I get it, Hardman got hurt. The receivers there were okay. They weren't that great. Once and look, 9 touchdown catches from a running back, you're living right when you get that. But it is Andy Reid. It is Patrick Mahomes. So if you finally got in on McKinnon at the right time, man, he you know, he didn't get you the playoffs. He may have won your playoffs for you, or at least had a big say in how you did in those money weeks.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Jared, I agree. It was Lord Podcast mentioned Justin Fields as a guy that could be the waiver wire pickup of the year. It was really difficult to nail down sort of
in really shallow leagues. Maybe you picked up Watson. Maybe you picked up Walker, you know, Watson. We talked about Dotson, guys like that. They were useful. Fields is really good. Once Fields got it going, he was kind of an every week guy. And I'm still not sure how good he is. They obviously didn't support him very well. He takes way too many sacks. They had very poor play at wide receiver. So a lot going on there.
Jerick McKinnon, 8 touchdowns on 27 catches from week 13 on. Pretty incredible finish there for Jerick McKinnon. So he's a good
running back. I mean, that would be crazy for any position, but that's especially crazy at a position where you don't think of, you know, if your running back catches 3 or 4 touchdowns in a season, you feel like you're fortunate.
Yeah, it's insane. And we spent all, you know, again, we're talking about a wasted oxygen award. We spent so much time during the offseason and in season debating like Chiefs wide receivers. And it's like, actually, what the one you want is Jerick McKinnon. That's really the one that's going to be your league winner. Not Kadarius Toney, not Sky Moore, certainly not MVS. It's actually going to be Jerick McKinnon catching 8 touchdowns on 27 balls. Pretty incredible.
And you talked about oxygen, by the way. Not that this guy had a bad season, but man, did we talk a lot about Isaiah Pacheco during the season?
Yeah,
and we're an hour into this award show.
And in the offseason as well, like preseason when it was, oh, he's the lead kick returner. That means he's going to be active on game. We did spend a lot of time on that too.
Was it just weird that he was wearing Tyreek Hill's number?
It always felt strange. It was that they had in conjunction with the fact that Sky Moore was wearing freaking 24 and Isaiah Pacheco was wearing 10. And the fact that was also Tyreek's number. There's a lot going wrong there.
I don't mind the funky numbers. I know there's some difference of opinion on the Yahoo staff about that, but when Tyreek Hill leaves, just let the number 10 breathe for a second. Don't give that number. Don't burden somebody with that number right away. That would be my advice.
My conspiracy theory on that is, like, you know, Tyreek was given all those interviews in the offseason about, oh no, Tua is actually like it's better than Patrick Mahomes type stuff. I'm Mahomes probably went to the equipment guy himself, like, you know what? Give Pacheco the 10, okay? We knew they were probably going to let it breathe. And I was like, no, we're actually going to give it to Pacheco right now. So that's my conspiracy theory on what happened there. All right.
Well, they should have given Jerick McKinnon number 10 because he was scoring. He outscored Tyreek Hill when it came to touchdowns.
Yeah, that is pretty incredible. There's a lot of incredible things that happened in the NFL. That's why Lord Podcast also wanted us to think about the, quote, "This League Moves Fast" award. He gave it to Melvin Gordon. I'm actually going to give it to his honorable mention here, who it was Daryl Henderson. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and exercise my authority over the podcast.
You're overruling
I'm overruling the lord of the podcast, John Gennaro here, and I'm going with Daryl Henderson actually at this one because, I mean, come on. I get it, Melvin Gordon. That was crazy, like, you know, although Gordon's season was pretty nuts, that it was like he was the thorn in the side. Then Javonte Williams gets hurt, and it's like, oh, maybe it's Melvin Gordon time. And then he ends up getting cut after all the fumbles. But Daryl Henderson, almost equally as crazy, he gets that absurd workload in week one. Cam Akers, talk about a guy who looked like he was about to get canceled by his own team, ends up being the league winner while Daryl Henderson gets cut, and he's never even a rumor with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I don't know, pretty crazy stuff for both of these running backs.
Yeah, I think this award could even go to Cam Akers, who was about 3 inches away from being out of the Rams, you know, life forever. And then a month later, he's rumbling for touchdowns. He was definitely in the circle of trust. It just goes to show you when you hit the playoffs, once a player has, you know, touch equity and touchdown equity, it doesn't matter if the Rams aren't any good and Baker Mayfield's on his like 17th team and all that. And Cam Akers was winning people fantasy championships, or at least pushing people forward in the fantasy playoffs. And he got you 3 touchdowns on Christmas Day, I think it was, and best game of his career. And he looked really good doing it. So good for him. This was not a Lord Podcast award, but I also want to mention, talk about when I said waiting for Godot. Another like total Al Capone's vault. Like there was no reveal. There was no there. Deshaun Watson, man. The people thought, oh, I'm going to hold on to Deshaun Watson and he'll unleash mayhem on the league. And man, did he do absolutely nothing. I also feel like we should mention Ramondre Stevenson. The Patriots were not watchable. And I almost had an award for Mac Jones being the Grayson Allen of the league, where, you know, let's throw a pick and then let's cheap shot somebody as they're doing the run back, which is like the Mac Jones go-to move these days.
And complain the rest of the game before that.
Right. Awful body language, man. My favorite as a Patriots fan, and whatever, they've won so much, I don't care. They could suck for the next 20 years. I'll live with it. My favorite Patriot moments this year were Bailey Zappi moments, or, of course, Ramondre Stevenson moments, who was, I feel like we should mention him. He definitely outkicked his ADP, and was in a year where I didn't think there were that many right answers, Matt. I think this was a hard fantasy season. Ramondre Stevenson was one of the right answers.
All right, last one here. The quote, "There's zero chance that I would be able to convince you this was real if I had a time machine and traveled back to the summer to tell you this one specific thing award, and it was the fact that Geno Smith was the quarterback 5 over Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, and Tom Brady." I agree, man. It would have been pretty tough to travel back in time. I know I've got some bad takes out there about Geno Smith and the quarterback position in Seattle this offseason, despite my love for Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. But hey, Geno, shout out to him. Like I said on the podcast with Dalton the other day, I know it seems like, oh, it's old news that Geno was so much better than Russell Wilson or anything like that, but it is still crazy that that is a real thing that happened this year.
Yeah, the name of guys he beat too. I mean, it go on and on, you know, Dak Prescott, yeah. Obviously Trey Lance got hurt, so he didn't go anywhere. So many big name quarterbacks fell on their face this year, but, and we mentioned it a few times during the year, but I'll mention it again. The also key to Geno Smith, if you came up with Geno Smith, even if you didn't want to draft him, it would have given you the confidence to cut the line by a half or full round, or you'll pay a couple extra bucks in your salary cap lead to get DK Metcalf, to get Tyler Lockett, who were fantastic. No receiver produces every week. You know, even Justin Jefferson has an off week once in a while, or Jamar Chase or whoever. But those guys were, Lockett, I think at one point scored 6 straight weeks, and Metcalf was just a terrific player, as he always is. And they had a pretty tight tree. I mean, they threw the ball like 17 different tight ends, but they didn't have a third receiver. Their running backs didn't catch the ball all that much. So I keep saying it. I don't think there are a lot of right answers this year. Geno Smith was the right answer, and he dragged. Metcalf and Lockett don't need a lot of help, but Geno Smith gave them plenty of help. And that's one of my hugest regrets. I've always been a huge Lockett guy. I've always been a big Metcalf guy. I was underweight on those guys this year, and Geno Smith made me regret it.
Yeah, man. Geno was definitely one of the stories of the season. I wish I'd been more open to the idea that Geno could be better than he was. But
and now he's going to lose by 17 to Brock Purdy in the first round of the playoffs. But hey, you know.
That's what Pete Carroll's out there, even at the press conference, like, yeah, you know, unfortunately, we are playing the Niners. So master manipulator, master motivator is old Pete Carroll. The beacon of truth when he gets behind the mic, Pete Carroll there. All right. That is going to do it for us. Scott, we've said it all. We've done it all. We even gave the people a 5-minute tangent on books, both fiction, nonfiction, the whole thing. Didn't see that one coming in this podcast, but I did know it was going to be an absolute banger of a show, and you delivered with some great awards here, Scott. Appreciate you, buddy.
It was fun, and you know, I'd like to. I'm throwing out one more award: Producer of the Year. I'm giving it to Lord Podcast.
Oh yeah, let the drop the applause on yourself there, John. Yeah. Drop the applause.
At least Southern Podcast. California Producer of the Year. I don't want to upset any of our producers who work at different parts of the country, so I'll give him the Southern California Production Award. And you know, if you need Padres advice, you need food recommendations in the greater San Diego area, he's your guy, true, man. Lord Podcast, John Gennaro, great American dog lover. Just he's helped me get through many. One time I had a problem with another podcast. I needed to fix the audio on it. He was happy to help. He's a great man. We're lucky to work with him. And, but let's do it. Let's do it again next year.
Hey, well, we got a lot of shows in the off season to go. It is going to be a hell of a time. And we're going to preview the playoffs tomorrow, Scott. You will be back with us then with your buddy, Frank Schwab. The Betting Boys are back to preview the wildcard weekend tomorrow. In the meantime, you can and you should be following at @Scott_Pianowski on Twitter. You also can, whether you should, it's questionable, but you can follow me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB, and you better be following at Yahoo Fantasy. Don't let me catch you not following at Yahoo Fantasy if you want to be a smarter fantasy player. Like I mentioned, Scott is going to be back tomorrow with the great Frank Schwab. The Betting Boys are going to be here to preview the wildcard weekend. Until then, we're out.